Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm in Genesis chapter 30. I'm going to cover verses 25 through 43 and finish up the chapter. I'm going to call this section of scripture Jacob Hoodoos Laban. Jacob the trickster deceives his uncle Laban. Our context is this. In the first 24 verses of chapter 30 of Genesis, Rachel and Leah had a baby birthing competition, which Leah won. So we start now in Genesis 30, verse 25 and 26. Remember, they're still in Haran in Syria, Padan Aram, as they called it back then. Verses 25 and 26 of Genesis 30. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country, i.e. Canaan, Beersheba. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service which I have rendered you." Now, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown speculate that Jacob probably had learned that Esau was out of the way by now, and so it was time to go back home. He'd be safe when he went back. And Adam Gill says that most commentators generally conjecture that the point of time at which we're located right now is after the 14 years which Jacob had contracted for tending sheep. They've now passed 7 years for Leah and 7 years for Rachel. And now the 6 years for tending the flocks begins. We read in Genesis 31:41 to get a feeling for the time. "These 20 years, Jacob says, I have been in your house, Laban. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. By the way, the King James has cattle for flock. The NIV has flocks. We're going to say flocks. I don't think he dealt with any cows. It was sheep and goats that he was dealing with. Now, in Genesis 31:41, Jacob says that Laban has changed his wages 10 times. The details of that are not given. It's a reasonable speculation that the changes occurred every time Jacob started receiving a certain kind of offspring. Spotted sheep, Laban says, "Oh, I'm not going to give you spotted sheep next time. Since you got so many this time, I'm going to give you the striped sheep for next time." And then Jacob would do his animal husbandry and get striped sheep the next time. But the scripture doesn't actually say. Now, Jacob wants to go back to his own country. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown remarked that Jacob's faith was really remarkable. He had nothing to rely on but the promises of God. All the sheep he had raised so far were Laban's, not his. He had 4 wives, 12 children, and no money, and no sheep. But he wanted to go back home anyway. He wanted to see his own father and mother. Jacob knew that Canaan was the promised land, and he wasn't in it. He wanted his promised seed to grow up in the promised land, and they weren't. They were growing up in Syria. Now, Jacob mentions the service he's given to Laban. He says, "You yourself know my service, which I have rendered you, Laban. You know my service." That service, no doubt, was beyond what was average. From the following story about the speckled and spotted sheep, we know that Jacob was a master herdsman. He knew what he was doing. Genesis 30, verses 27 and 28. "But Laban said to Jacob, 'If now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account.' He continued, 'Name me your wages, and I will give it.'" Now, Laban was dead set on Jacob saying. It wasn't because he loved Jacob, or it wasn't because he loved his daughters, Rachel and Leah. It wasn't because he loved his grandchildren, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, etc., etc. It was because he would be damaged financially. He would lose a great sheep herder because Laban was out for the almighty dollar, or the almighty shekel as it was. Now, I must say that we have to read between the lines a little bit to know that Laban was an avaricious sort of character. But as we go on, we'll see. Changing his deal with Jacob, the marriage contract for one thing. He got 7 extra years because of trickery, by substituting Leah for Rachel on Jacob's wedding night. 7 years of labor, that's avaricious. And now changing the deal 10 times about the sheep, that's avaricious. He was a jerk. He was the type of person you don't want to do business with. Now, in verse 27, Laban is very polite. He says to Jacob, "If now it pleases you, stay with me." As Gill says, quote, "He," Laban, "craftily cajoles Jacob in this fawning, flattering way in order to gain a point, and begs of him in a very humble and suppliant manner, if he had any love for him, that he would not depart from him, but stay with him, which he should take as a great favor, for he could not insist upon it as bound in duty or as a point of justice." Well, no, he couldn't. 14 years is up. He made the deal was over, and so now he's being very polite. He doesn't want to use Jacob. Now, Laban says, "I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." Well, now, divination, "I have divined," that's a problem. divination later was strictly forbidden to Israel. That means talking with demons to get information. Leviticus 19:26 says, "You shall not eat anything with the blood, nor practice divination or soothsaying." Deuteronomy 18:10, "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, one who uses divination, one who practices witchcraft, or one who interprets omens or a sorcerer." Now, the same stuff that goes on today, New Age stuff, it was forbidden. Deuteronomy 18:14, "For those nations which you shall dispossess, listen to those who practice witchcraft and to diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not allowed you to do so." So witchcraft is obviously that's a bad thing. But did Laban actually do that? Does he actually need divination to see that Jacob had blessed him? Here's what he says. He says, "I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." You have to go to a red-hand lady to find out that Jacob has blessed you. All he has to do is look around. Look at all the sheep that Jacob grew for him. And look at all the grandchildren he had produced for him. And he's got to go to a witch or a sorcerer to learn that? No, that doesn't make any sense. It's wrong to say Laban literally learned by divination. Translation has a lot to do with it. In Genesis 30:27 in the Holman Christian Study Bible, it reads this way: "Laban said to him, 'If I have found favor with you, stay. I have learned by divination.'" Well, that's going to the red hand lady. But if you read it in the New American Standard, for example, it said, Laban says, "I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." Well, we do that in English. We say, "I have divined that it's going to be a hot day tomorrow." It doesn't mean that you went to a sorcerer or a sorceress or a witch to find that out. It just means you figured it out. Even in English, we use that term divined metaphorically. John Gill agrees with me on this. He says, quote, "It is not credible that the devil should give so famous a testimony to Laban of Jehovah and Jacob." Well, I don't know about that. Sometimes the devil does give true prophecies, but I think that the real reason is it's not necessary for Laban to divine. It's just obvious that Jacob had blessed him. In verse 28, Laban continues, "Name me your wages and I will give it." And John Gill says that Laban was so effusive here. It was because Laban knew that Jacob, who was not an aggressive sort of guy, he would mention a low price. Because remember, Jacob was his mama's boy. He used to hang around his tents, didn't like to hunt or farm. However, we must say he did that. He did hang around the tents a lot, but he also liked to shepherd a lot too. I'm sure he, even back in his days in Canaan, he was a shepherd. But we can already see he meekly submitted to the extra 7 years of labor he had to give for Rachel. However, in Jacob's defense, we need to say Jacob was in no position to threaten Laban or bargain with him hard. He was an alien in a strange land, and he didn't have any money. He didn't have any police. He didn't have any troops. He didn't have an armed retinue. So Gil might be a little bit hard on Jacob for saying he's meek. He might have just been in a bad circumstance. That's why he didn't bargain hard. We go now to verses 29 and 30 of Genesis 30. "But he," that's Jacob, "said to him," Laban, "you yourself know, Laban, how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" Reasonable question. Then ASB has Jacob saying, "You know, Laban, how your cattle have fared with me." The NIV has livestock. That makes me wonder whether Jacob was managing cattle as well as sheep, and I doubt that. I don't know. I'm sure it has to do with the translation. I haven't really researched that out too much, but we're going to assume it's just sheep and goats from the story that comes up ahead. And Jacob tells Laban, "You had little before I came." Was he exaggerating? Well, I don't think so. The flock that Laban had was so little that Rachel could manage it by herself. Remember, she went up with the flocks to Jacob at the well when she first met Jacob, when Jacob first arrived in Haran. Rachel came up with all the sheep. So Laban didn't have a lot. We go now to Genesis 30, verses 31 through 33. "So he," Laban, "said, 'What shall I give you, Jacob?' And Jacob said, 'You shall not give me anything if you will do this one thing for me. I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep and every black one among the lambs and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages.'" That's kind of good. You know, Jacob talking about his honesty. He's noted for being a trickster and deceiver. His very name means deceiver because he deceived Esau. But anyway, he says, "So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages." Compared to Laban, he was honest. "Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs and found with me will be considered stolen." Now here begins the story of Jacob's speckled sheep. I've done the whole book of Revelation. I have perfect confidence in teaching one of the hardest books in the Bible, but I don't think the book of Revelation compares, the difficulty of that book compares to the problems of Jacob and his speckled and spotted sheep. So I'm going to do the best I can here. We start with verse 31. Laban says, "What shall I give you?" In other words, name your price. He's still trying to get Jacob to name his price. Jacob says, "You shall not give me anything." That means a fixed certain salary. It doesn't mean anything absolutely because he wants the speckled and spotted sheep. In verse 32, Jacob says, "Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from every speckled and spotted sheep and every black one among the lambs, and such shall be my wages." Now, Jacob probably meant when he says, "Let me pass through," he assumed that he would pass through Laban's flocks with Laban and his sons for accountability's sake to make sure that there's no hanky-panky going on, that Jacob is actually taking the black and speckled sheep. That was probably the deal. And black, by the way, is John Gill and Jameson Fawcett Brown say that the word Hebrew word for black perhaps could be translated as russet or dark brown or dark reddish brown. We're just going to say black. Keep it easy. Now, in this discussion that follows about these sheep, we need to keep some things straight. First of all, there's two kinds of animals, there's sheep and goats. And in the ancient Near East, most sheep were white, solid white, and most goats were solid black. So in the discussion that follows, I'm going to try to say solid, meaning solid white and solid black, just to make it simpler. Non-solid means spotted and speckled, whether it's sheep or goats, either way. That would be Jacob's sheep and goats, speckled. Now there's one other kind of animal here that kind of ruins the symmetry a little bit, is the black sheep. Excuse me, the black lambs. Now sometimes age will affect what kind of wool is on a sheep's back, so apparently black sheep would perhaps turn speckled when they got older. I don't know, but Jacob was going to get the black sheep too, the black lambs also. But we're not going to talk about black lambs so much because it just adds complexity to it. We're just going to talk about speckled and spotted sheep and goats. Those are Jacob's. Solid white sheep and solid black goats. Solid belongs to Laban. And by the way, speckled sheep and speckled goats are rare, comparatively few and rare, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. And so that's why Laban said in verse 34, good, because that's a good deal. As we turn to Genesis 30, verses 34 through 36, Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. So he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his son. Sons, plural. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now, first problem we have here, well, let's start with verse 34. First of all, why did Laban say good? Well, because on the surface, this sounded like a real good deal for Laban. Because white sheep generally produce only white sheep. That's the dominant gene. Black goats generally produce black goats. Recessive genes show up, and you get some speckled and spotted ones. But generally, they are in a minority. Now, there's a question about removing these sheep. Verse 35. I got three options for that, and the options depend on how we discuss the issue later on, so let's look at this. He removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats. This is Laban. Gave it to his sons. Now, option number one is that Laban did this secretly and without telling Jacob. And then, after he pulled the speckled and spotted ones out, he gave them to Laban's son in order to keep them away from Jacob, even though that was part of the deal. In other words, Laban is up to his lying, avaricious, fraudulent ways again. And of course, the purpose for doing this, it would make it highly unlikely that Jacob would have any speckled sheep or goats, because, well, in the future, as time went on, Laban's white flocks are not going to produce a lot of speckled sheep. They produce some, but not a lot, especially since if you've already culled the herd or culled the flock of the spotted and speckled sheep. Now, I'm going to assume here that the deal was that Jacob got speckled sheep that were now existing. It sure sounds like that. And for the future, he was supposed to get the speckled and spotted sheep and goats also. Well, if Laban has pulled out the speckled and spotted flock at the very beginning, that means at ground zero, Jacob would start out with zero speckled goats and sheep. Now, that doesn't mean he can't still produce speckled goats and sheep later on. Sheep and goats later on. He could, but it would just slow things down a little bit, maybe even a lot. But that's option one. Laban is trying to trick Jacob. Option number two, Laban culls the speckled sheep in order to pay Jacob. In other words, he says, okay, that's the deal. You get the speckled goats and sheep, so I'm going to take them out, pull them out of the herd, I'm going to give them to you in the care of his sons, the his there meaning Jacob's sons and not Laban's sons. Well, now that seems unlikely to me. The antecedent for sons is a long way away. The closest antecedent is Laban in verse 34, so you think it would be Laban's sons, not Jacob's sons. Jacob is where does he last mentioned? Way up here. Let's see. I can't even find where I see the word Jacob on here. Okay, let's forget that. So let's assume, it makes more sense to me to assume that's Laban's sons, that the speckled ones were kept in care of. So it doesn't sound to me like Laban is doing his duty in removing the sheep and giving it to Jacob. Another problem with that is that, as Gil says, that Jacob's oldest son, Reuben, was only 7 years old. So you're going to get all the speckled ones and give them to a seven-year-old kid? I don't think so. So that's an unlikely option. Let's look at option number three. This is John Gill's idea. Laban is said to have culled the speckled sheep for security. In other words, he's going to pull the sheep out and put them in the care of his sons, not to own the sheep, but just to hold the sheep as security in case Jacob tries to fly the coop and take off with the speckled sheep and goats that he produces later on. Now, if you think about this, it would be hard for Laban to stop Jacob. Jacob is operating away from Laban, 3 days away from the troops, from the Laban's flock, as it turns out. And we see later on, he was able to flee. Of course, Laban had an armed retinue to chase him down, which happened. So maybe security was not absolutely necessary. The idea here is that every time that speckled sheep were born, Laban's sons would keep them for security, and then the newborn white sheep would be put under Jacob's care so he could take care of the white sheep. I don't believe that for a minute, and if that was true, it would screw up my discussion of what happens next or how Jacob ended up producing more speckled goats and sheep. So I don't think this is the answer. Besides, the original deal said nothing about security. Usually if you make a deal, you talk about security. If I buy a house, I talk about my down payment. If I rent an apartment, I talk about the security deposit. The original deal said nothing about security. The original deal said the speckled sheep and goats were supposed to belong to Jacob outright, not in pledge. So we're going to throw that one out, and we're going to assume that Jacob stole the speckled sheep and the speckled goats. Now, the speckled sheep actually are not mentioned here. Speckled male goats and speckled and spotted female goats are mentioned, but I assume the sheep are included in this. They just weren't mentioned here. It says every one of these goats that had white in it, because remember, generally the goats were black. And all the black ones among the sheep, that would be the black lambs, and also any white sheep that had black spots in it, I'm assuming. We're not going to make this thing any more complicated than it already is. Now, verse 36 says that Laban put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and then Jacob went around to feeding the rest of Laban's flocks. 3 days' distance. Why did Laban take the speckled sheep and go 3 days away? Well, that was to keep the speckled sheep and goats away from Laban's white sheep that Jacob was tending. And why would Laban want to do that? Because the less speckled and spotted goats you have, the less chance when you mate the sheep that you're going to end up with more speckled sheep and goats. And Jacob would end up with more sheep than he would have otherwise. He might have wanted to move the speckled sheep and goats 3 days away to keep Jacob from having the opportunity to steal them back, if you assume that Laban stole them to start with. But anyway, here's Jacob, 3 days away. He has no military power or police power. He cannot get his sheep back. He was screwed again, probably. And if he wasn't screwed again, he's got a white flock, and his only chance of capital gain is to produce a speckled flock of sheep and goats. So we go to Genesis 30, verses 37 through 39. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled, that's P-L-A-N, plane trees, and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. He set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. Now here's where the mystery begins, but before we discuss that, let's look at the kinds of rods that Jacob made from poplar and almond and plane trees. I know what a poplar tree is. I know what an almond tree is. Poplars I have in the woods around where I live. Almonds I eat. I haven't seen the tree, but I know what the almonds are. But a plane tree, I looked it up on the internet, Oxford Dictionaries. Quote, a tall spreading tree of the northern hemisphere with maple-like leaves and bark that peels in irregular patches. Well, the bark that peels, that makes sense, because Jacob peeled the bark on these rods and end up with have so that the wood that would show would be white in between the bark. so he got his striped rods. The dictionary says a tree of the northern hemisphere. Well, Israel's in the northern hemisphere, so I guess that works okay. Now, why did Jacob do this? Why did he make striped rods with white stripes? Well, the common assumption is that Jacob wanted to make the rods look speckled, or multicolored, if you will, not solid, just like the sheep and the goats that Jacob wanted. And that's probably true, but the question is why in the world did Jacob think that this is going to call the sheep and the goats to bear speckled young? Well, let's look at the speculation on that issue. Here's option one. The rods didn't cause speckling and spotting of the sheep and goats. They didn't do that. It was just Jacob's superstition. He just thought they would do that. This is the NIV Study Bible's opinion. But nonetheless, God overrode that superstition and caused the sheep to bear the way they did. We read in Genesis 31:9, the next chapter, "Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me," Jacob says to Rachel. God has done it. God did it, but Jacob thought that he had done it with his striped rods. The New American Bible says that there was a widespread notion among primitive people that visual stimuli affects conception. And so Jacob was just doing what shepherds back then did, not understanding what they were doing, that was not having any effect, according to this theory. We note that if this is true, that Jacob was still trying to use his smarts to outwit other people. He's the deceiver, remember? And I looked at a lot of stuff on the internet, and it seems to me this option is the one that most people believe, is that Jacob was just superstitious, like the NIV Study Bible believes. Jacob was superstitious, and God used his superstition anyway to pay him back for getting screwed by Laban for 14 years. Option number two is that Jacob expected and got a miracle. In other words, he didn't believe that those rods had anything to do with the sheep and the goats producing the way they did, but nonetheless, he had had this vision, and so he did that in response to the vision. Let's read the vision, Genesis 31:10-12. It was a dream, actually. "And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream. And behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and spotted. Then the angel of God said to me in a dream, 'Jacob,' I said, 'Here I am.' Jacob, the angel said, and I said, 'Here I am.' He said, 'Lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you.'" Now, we notice in the dream there's no mention of striped rods. It's just speckled goats and sheep. And so it could be that Jacob's just trying to help God along with what he had been promised. And one other problem with that is that when did he have this dream? It says when the flock were mating, which sounds like after he made that deal with Laban. So there's a, I don't know, it could, I guess the dream could have happened right at the time they were mating, so he could have put the rods up right at mating season to try to fulfill the vision that he had from God. Okay, so option one is that Jacob is just relying on folklore, on superstition amongst shepherds back then. Option number two is he had a vision, so he went back and did the rods. But I would assume the rods were still part of that folklore, so option two is just a variation on option one. Option number three is that there were natural means involved here, that there's actually some kind of scientific connection between the striped rods and the speckled and spotted sheep and goats. This view says that Jacob had learned how to produce speckled sheep and goats during his years of sheep herding. He was obviously very good at it. Remember, he had increased Laban's flocks very much. Here's what Adam Clark says about this view, the natural means view. Quote, "It has long been an opinion that whatever makes a strong impression on the mind of a female in the time of conception and gestation will have a corresponding influence on the mind or body of the fetus." Now remember, Clark is writing in the 1800s now. "This opinion is not yet rationally accounted for. It is not necessary to look for a miracle here. For though the fact has not been accounted for, it is nevertheless sufficiently plain that the effect does not exceed the powers of nature. And I have no doubt that the same modes of trial used by Jacob will produce the same results in similar cases." If you think about it, there's so many strange things in science that it's not inherently difficult for me to believe that you put something in front of a female, either a human or an animal, and that that would affect how the baby comes out. There's lots of other stranger things in science. But Clark assumed that sooner or later somebody would prove this, tested it through experiments, but time has not borne out Clark's prediction, at least not that I know of. I don't know of any experiment that backs that up, that you can affect the offspring by what the mother looks at while she is conceiving. Henry Morris, the famous old Earth creationist, New Earth creationist, the geologist, says this, quote, "Whether or not the sense of sight can actually mark the embryo in some way, there's no doubt that what one sees may have a strong effect on certain physiologic mechanisms on his body. The phenomenon of blushing, the nauseous reactions produced by viewing gruesome sights, and the effect of pornographic pictures in stimulating the sexual apparatus are typical cases in point." Well, that's true. What you see affects what you are. The question is what you see, does it affect the embryo? Henry Morris seems to think that's possible. Well, there's another natural explanation besides the visual stimulus on the embryo view. There is the view that says the rods will peel to expose wood to the water, and when Jacob put those rods into the water trough, chemicals were released from the water trough, and those chemicals affected the embryos. Now, Henry Morris says that that could be true. Creation.com, which is another young earth creationist science type blog, they say, no, it's not true. But this view says that Jacob, even though he did not understand the chemistry, he may have learned the effect of putting striped wood into the water from long years of observation. And I would say right now, well, why did he just take all the bark off so he would have more chemicals getting into the water? That's one problem with this view. Well, here's a possible comeback to that. Well, he didn't take all the bark off. He's trying to make a symbolic point. Laban means white in Hebrew, and he's tricking Laban, so he's saying, look here, here's a rod, white, all around this rod, and white is getting tricked. Laban is getting tricked. There's another problem with the view, though. Jacob did the same visual trick when he faced Laban's white sheep towards the speckled animals in verse 40, which we'll get to in a minute, and that had nothing to do with chemicals in the water, but Jacob still managed to get speckled sheep from that process. And so that sounds like the visual prenatal influence view, that what you see, what the mama sees affects the baby. So it's obvious there he was not relying on chemicals in the water. A related view is the aphrodisiac view, that chemicals from the wood caused the sheep to mate more. Didn't cause them to be speckled or spotted, but caused them to be more fertile, more prolific, to have more babies. Is what Morris says, quote, "At least one such chemical substance found in these trees has been used for such a purpose in both ancient and modern times." Ooh, aphrodisiac from almonds and plane trees and poplar trees. And I think this is Morris also. I didn't write the quote down, but perhaps even just the sight of the rods produced an aphrodisiac effect. Here's the quote. "In some way not understood, but apparently confirmed by many practical animal raisers since, the sight of white-streaked rods seems to stimulate these animals to sexual activity, in which case the purpose of the rods was not to get speckled and specks and spots, but was rather to get more sheep who would then have specks and spots." Well, what do we make of all this? Before I give you my tentative speculative conclusion, highly speculative conclusion, let's go back to this idea of white. Laban, as I said, means white, but the words for those three trees that were used, poplar, almond, and plane trees, the Hebrew words for those three trees are puns on the Hebrew word for white. So Jacob was ironically using white rods to get back at Laban, just like he used red stew to deceive Esau. Esau means red, so he said, okay, you're red, Esau. I'm going to use red stew to deceive you. Now Laban is white. I'm going to use white rods to deceive him. Now that's kind of makes the argument a little bit stronger that he's using these rods for not for scientific, natural reasons, but he's using these rods mainly to get back at Laban. Of course, it could be that he's doing both, getting back at Laban and also somehow because of agricultural folklore producing more speckled and spotted offspring of the flock. Well, having gone through all that, this is what I will give you now as my highly speculative conclusion. When I say highly speculative, it could be that when I go to bed tonight, I've come up with a different view, but here's what I'm thinking. Jacob is using selective breeding techniques garnered from his years of experience as a shepherd. Let me tell you how we will have to look at this in a future verse when we get down to verse 40. But the idea is this. He starts out with speckled and spotted sheep. And depending on did he have access to that at the very beginning, of course, I just said that Laban had stolen the speckled and spotted sheep in the original flock and moved in three days' journey away. But the next flock that bore, they bore twice a year, the next flock that came in would have some speckled and spotted sheep just by the law of averages. And so Jacob could have started with that small sub-flock, if you will, of speckled and spotted sheep and goats. And then from that, practice his selective breeding techniques, putting the strong animals together at the same time, and so forth. And so he could be using selective breeding techniques. Naturally, he wouldn't understand the genetics behind it, but years of experience would have told him you breed them a certain way, you get certain results. And not only did he breed for speckles and spots, he bred for strength also. He was encouraged to do this in a dream by God, as we just mentioned. I'm thinking the white sticks were not the cause of the selective breeding, and notice the text never says that. That is an assumption that we make. So then you have to ask, well, why were the white sticks used? I just gave you a good reason to poke fun at Laban. White stripes. One problem with my view here is, how did Jacob start using selective breeding since all of his original flock were solid? Well, possible answer to that is the original flock was not all solid, that he had access to the speckled and spotted sheep that he pulled out, and that when Laban pulled those speckled and spotted sheep and goats out, he entrusted them to Jacob and not to Laban's sons, to Jacob's sons, who were only 7 years old. So that's weak. I think the best answer to that is, okay, Laban messed Jacob over on that first flock by taking his speckled and spotted sheep that should have belonged to Jacob. But the next year, remember, Jacob is managing Laban's flock, well, the next half year, the sheep are born, and then Jacob just pulls out the speckled and spotted sheep, and he starts from that flock to selectively breed from then on. I think that's perfectly reasonable. And then the sticks, we don't have to speculate about aphrodisiac rods or chemicals in the water from the rods, or the effect of external stimuli on sheep fetuses. We don't have to get into all that. We just say this is just Jacob's way of making a point while he's using well-known and good shepherding techniques to produce the kind of sheep that he wants to produce. I think that's reasonable. I hope you think so too. If not, please email me, dantrott@gmail.com, and tell me what the answer is, because I've looked for a lot of commentaries and a lot of places on the internet, and I don't see anything better than that. We now go to Genesis 30, verse 40. As I said, I'm going to go to another aspect of Jacob's agricultural techniques to show how he got those speckled sheep and goats. Genesis 30, verse 40. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban, and he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Now, the first thing that confused the heck out of me is why he says he made his flocks, he separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. Well, the flock of Laban doesn't have stripes and blacks. The flock of Laban is all white. Well, I think what happens here is the author collapsed a little bit. I think what happened is that the flock of Laban each year or each half year produced speckled and black sheep, as any flock will, and then Jacob separated the black and sheep flocks out of that flock. And so when it says the flock of Laban, that means the flock of Laban as it existed at the beginning with speckled sheep and goats and solid sheep and goats in it, and then Jacob separated them out of that flock of Laban. And when he says he separated the lambs, I'm sure he means the goats too. And then it says in verse 40 that Jacob made the flocks face toward the striped and black in the flock of Laban. And again, that seems to support the external visual stimuli of the mama affects the baby view. And that's how we end up with spotted and speckled and striped sheep. Well, what about this? What if Jacob separates out the striped and the, well, it doesn't say the spotted and the speckled. It just says striped and all the black. Let's just say the non-solid sheep. He pulls them out of Laban's flock, and then he takes his flocks, which are spotted and speckled, and he faces them in the sense that he merges them together and puts them together, and then they mate with each other and produce more speckled and spotted sheep and goats. So that way you get away from this visual stimuli argument, which is so weak, or at least incomprehensible to us. And of course, Jacob does this for 10 times. He says his wages have been changed 10 times. That would include the 6 years after the 14th year. And I assume, now that's an interesting question too, is where do the 10 years come from? 6 years after the 14th year is, we know that he worked extra in us. The other 4 years must have been at the end of the second 7 year period, overlapping. But at any rate, he had 10 years to produce these solid and speckled sheep and goats. Now, verse 40 concludes by saying that Jacob put his own herds apart from Laban's part. That's obvious why, so that the sheep wouldn't get mixed up. his sheep would be separate from Laban's sheep. Now, if you believe in the visual stimulus view, then Jacob separated the sheep because he didn't want his speckled sheep to look upon those white sheep, those solid sheep, and those black goats, solid black goats, because that would mess up their offspring, make them solid too. But I don't really believe that. I think he just wanted to separate them out just to keep his property straight. We go now to Genesis 41 through 43, and we'll finish up this section. Verse 41, moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Now, I'll say right up front here that this makes my view that I just gave you a little bit weaker, because it sounds like as Jacob selectively bred to get stronger flocks for himself, that he used those rods to do it. And it was more than just a symbolic poke in the eye at Laban. I don't know. I can still make the argument that he's mating the stronger sheep together. And that's easy to do. I mean, you just get the stronger sheep, put them together, and then you stick the rods in front and says, ah, ha, ha, Laban, I'm getting the stronger ones. Let the white on the stick, on the rod, stand for Laban, because Laban means white. And he's saying, look at this, Laban, I'm getting the stronger sheep. So we see now that the selective animal husbandry, the selective breeding that Jacob is doing, is not just for the color of the wool, speckled and spotted, but also because the breeding was done for the strength of the lamb or the goats. Now, verse 43 says, the man, that's Jacob, became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Now, why did he have camels and donkeys? Well, to prepare for his trip home, which he's planning to make. You have to have camels and donkeys to get across that desert from Haran back down to Beersheba in the southern part of Israel. Jacob probably sold the sheep he had to buy those camels. He also had enough money to buy female and male servants, so he went from being poor to being prosperous. And the Bible doesn't condemn him for being rich, because the Bible does not condemn rich people, because the Bible is not socialist. Ladies and gentlemen, now that I've finished with chapter 30, we are now prepared for chapter 30, verses 25 through 43. Which concludes the whole of chapter 30. We are now ready to go to Genesis 31. Next audio, I'll do verses 1 through 25, and we'll see Jacob fleeing Laban with his newfound wealth. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.